Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our American way of life. On today's show, we take a deep dive into where else but the criminal courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan and Donald J. Trump. They wrapped up jury selection voir dire in rapid speed last week. We have our full slate of jurors and even alternates to the jury pool. Opening arguments today. Wow, they are not wasting any time there. All that and more in today's deep dive. And then later on in the show, in today's closing argument, absolutely shocking and appalling images coming out of some of the nation's purported elite universities. This is nothing new for those of us who have covered this for months, if not years now, but it has reached a fever pitch at universities such as Columbia and Yale. We are talking specifically about the absolutely explosive rise of disgusting Nazi-esque anti-Semitism. There really is no other way to call it than Nazi-esque. How in the world do we get to this point? But regardless, we Jews are starting the celebration of our Passover holiday tonight. I think these themes very much all relate to one another. I'm going to explain it all in today's closing argument segment. But for now, as always, we begin by going around the horn. We begin also in New York City, where we will return for today's deep dive. But for now, just a brief note that there is a separate hearing in the civil case, in Attorney General Tish James's civil case against Donald Trump and the Trump Organization for fraud. There is a hearing today essentially on the legitimacy of the $175 million bond payment that was posted by Knight Specialty Insurance Company, a California-based surety and insurance company that is backed by a Trump-sympathetic billionaire. I'm not entirely sure why this hearing is necessary. I guess just given the sheer size of a bond of this nature, $175 million. Recall, of course, that that number was actually lowered. It was initially supposed to be $464 or roughly therein billion dollars or so. But it's going to be a hearing today at 10 a.m. Eastern time to determine the legitimacy of that bond payment. There is really no indication whatsoever that this is going to get rejected, so it is something of a formality, but something at least to put on your radar. From New York City down to Florida, just a brief update there in the classified documents case in the courtroom of federal judge Aileen Cannon. This is the prosecution. This is probably the least discussed of the four Trump prosecutions right now, but it potentially could change over the next few weeks, if not months. On Wednesday, this Wednesday, we are expected to see the grand jury testimony of Walt Nuta, who is a Trump aide who has worked with Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. He is a co-defendant in Jack Smith's federal prosecution there involving classified documents in Mar-a-Lago for the very simple reason that the government alleges that Walt Nuta, operating on Donald Trump's command, was involved in the destruction or the hiding of evidence and possibly ignoring grand jury subpoenas and things of that nature. So the overarching charge is essentially an obstruction of justice charge. In any event, on Wednesday, they're going to release some of the grand jury testimony for Walt Nuta. So that will be very interesting to check there. As a brief reminder, Donald Trump is actually using many of the same attorneys, including Todd Blanche, as lead counsel for his two cases in Florida and the criminal case in New York City, which we're going to get to later on the show today. And that is one of the reasons that his attorneys are pushing for the Florida case to be delayed as much as possible. Ideally, in his attorney's eyes, obviously, past the 2024 presidential election itself. They're probably not going to get that lucky, but they actually are using the same attorneys there. So in any event, look forward to that getting unveiled, that grand jury testimony, that is, from Walt Nuta in the Mar-a-Lago case this Wednesday. And then from Florida up to Washington, D.C. Just putting in another reminder for you guys, you know, final reminder before the big day, because I won't be recording tomorrow and Wednesday because of the Passover holiday. But the final reminder that on Thursday, that's the day, folks. I mean, if you have not already circled your calendar, I don't really know what you're doing listening to this program, American Trial. But Thursday is the big day at the U.S. Supreme Court. That is the oral argument in the presidential immunity case. This is the crown jewel. This is the crown jewel case for the Biden regime. They are putting many of their eggs at this point in the basket of Jack Smith in the Washington, D.C. case, especially as the Georgia case continues to look shakier and shakier with Fannie Willis and that whole mess down there in Fulton County. They really, really are hoping for this case in Washington, D.C., Jack Smith's federal probe pertaining to so-called election interference for the 2020 election and the events leading up to and including January 6, 2021. They are hoping that that case can ultimately make it to trial prior to the 2024 presidential election. But in order to do so, they must first pass the threshold question as to whether or not Donald Trump is actually immune from criminal prosecution due to acts that he took in office. And that is the subject of this Thursday's absolutely blockbuster oral argument. It's going to be a doozy before the justices, as I have said all along. I think that they are going to come down with something of a middle ground, middle of the road ruling here. They're going to have to pare back the D.C. Circuit's unanimous per curiam opinion, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, in an unsigned three-judge per curiam opinion, essentially held that there really is no immunity whatsoever. They took an exceedingly cramped and limited view of immunity for presidents after they leave office for acts that they took in office when it comes to criminal immunity. It was, from my reading of the opinion, a very potentially dangerous view of immunity insofar as it could lead presidents to do certain things and take certain actions that they might regret out of fear of future prosecution. So the justices are going to have to pare that back. They're probably not going to also go for Trump's full argument either of full entire sweeping immunity whatsoever. So I continue to think that the most likely outcome here is some sort of middle ground remedy. But we will, of course, see on Thursday. Make sure that you tune in for that. A couple of other brief notes in Washington, D.C., out of the Congress. So a brief update for you on TikTok. So over the weekend, the U.S. House passed this sprawling foreign aid and national security suite of legislation, which is getting, of course, all sorts of headlines. You have a lot of folks that are very upset. I happen to also be upset to a large extent as well over the way this was handled by Speaker Mike Johnson. It's kind of an independent question as to whether he deserves to lose his speakership over it, but I definitely don't think this was handled well. But as part of this suite of foreign aid packages, you did have the House vote again for another TikTok divestment ban. So if you recall, last month that the House passed a standalone bill, basically putting a six-month selling deadline by ByteDance, the Chinese technology firm, to get them to sell TikTok, or else there would be a forced divestment. That was a standalone bill that essentially died, at least so far, in the U.S. Senate. Joe Biden seemed like he was sympathetic to it, but it didn't really matter because the U.S. Senate didn't take it up. So as part of this suite of foreign aid bills for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, Gaza, I have no idea why they did that, neither here nor there for present purposes, but they also added this additional vote to vote 360-58 to put in a one-year mandatory sell period for ByteDance to get rid of TikTok or have a forced divestment. So they basically changed it from 6 months to a year. That was in response to some of the Senate's claimed objection. They thought it was an unnecessarily short amount of time to give ByteDance to sell TikTok. So the question is from here, you know, will the Senate actually take it up this time? Will they do anything when it comes to the national security threat posed by TikTok, which, as I have argued many times, amounts to Chinese Communist Party spyware that is really just ruining impressionable millennial and Gen Z brains and turning them into mush with no shortage of Chinese Communist Party induced propaganda suffusing those algorithms as well there. This is not a free speech issue, no matter what those who may take a certain free speech view tell you it has nothing whatsoever to do with free speech. You do not have an unequivocal free speech right to operate as a foreign commercial entity in the United States. Foreign corporations do not have First Amendment rights. That is constitutional law 101. Personally speaking, I hope that this legislation ultimately passes. One other brief note out of the U.S. Congress. This weekend, Joe Biden also signed into law Section 702 under the FISA Act, a renewal there. He reauthorized Section 702 FISA surveillance. This has been a debate that has gobbled up a ton of time in Congress over the past few weeks. Much debate over whether they should put in an additional warrant requirement to make sure that U.S. citizens were not accidentally swept up in what Section 702 generally does, which is generally surveils foreigners. But if you have a situation where a foreigner is communicating with a U.S. citizen when it comes to Section 702 FISA surveillance, then the question is raised, does the U.S. citizen then have Fourth Amendment rights? Do you need a warrant there? So this is a whole debate there, and I'm not entirely sure that it was properly handled by the House, to be honest with you. I thought that the objectors had some points in their merit for sure when it came to trying to put additional requirements into Section 702 to make sure that U.S. citizens were not accidentally swept up. But in any event, that piece of legislation has now been signed into law by Joe Biden, and it has been renewed. One final note here for our Around the Horn segment out of the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio, like many states, has passed a strong piece of legislation over the veto, by the way, over the veto of the weak-chested and limp-in-a-feet governor of Ohio, a rhino, if there ever were one, by the name of Governor Mike DeWine. The legislature of Ohio has passed over his veto a fairly standard ban on kiddie chemical castration for so-called gender-affirming care, for transgender surgeries, for this nation's vulnerable youth. And they are currently litigating it in the courts there. And all the usual suspects, the ACLU, the liberal interest groups, are currently litigating this. They are suing it. It's an alleged violation of this, of that. It's all nonsense. Of course, this sort of thing is entirely prudent and legitimate and well within the police power rights of the state legislature. And I want to just briefly flag for you an interesting argument that the Ohio Attorney General's Office and Ohio Solicitor General's Office are making here. They are actually taking it upon themselves to appeal to the Ohio Supreme Court and to basically argue that a statewide injunction that was placed by a lower court judge in the course of this litigation is irreconcilable with Ohio procedure, that there is no precedent in Ohio law or equity for a statewide injunction. This is notable because this directly follows on the heels of numerous Supreme Court justices writing very much the same thing just about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, in an unrelated opinion when it came to the illegitimacy of nationwide injunctions when it comes to Article 3 federal litigation in federal court. I say all this just to kind of to put on your radar right now that the broader argument over the legitimacy of statewide or nationwide injunctions is starting to hit something of a fever pitch here. And I very much expect that this is going to reach a fever pitch in the Trump second term, if that second term does come. Back during Trump's first term, so often you had these leftist activist public interest litigation shops that were trying to go to sympathetic judges out in California or Hawaii to try to put a nationwide injunction on this whole thing. It seems like right of center America, legally speaking, is finally having enough of this. And good riddance. I have been a vociferous opponent of nationwide injunctions ever since I was in law school. And I was heartened to see that here in Ohio, in a so-called culture war case of great magnitude and moral heft, that the Ohio Attorney General's office is also taking it upon itself to make very similar arguments on a slightly smaller scale when it comes to the legitimacy or lack thereof of statewide injunctions there in the Buckeye State. So good for you in the Ohio Attorney General's office. Okay, that's it for today's Around the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, opening arguments are getting started in Donald Trump's first criminal trial. Wow, they are really rapidly progressing there in Juan Merchan's courtroom. All that and more when we come back.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are, and it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. And where else would today's deep dive be but back into the courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan. He is the judge overseeing the first ever criminal prosecution of a former United States president who, oh, by the way, happens to be a major party presumptive nominee for president yet again. This is the first time this is ever happening in the history of the Republic. And, you know, I say that because sometimes on this show, and sometimes just in general, we tend to get in the weeds, and that's what we do. We want to analyze the legal issues for you. We want to analyze the jurors. We want to analyze the arguments. We want to analyze the witnesses, the parties, the lawyers, the counsel, all this and that. But sometimes you actually really do need to just zoom out a little bit and see what is really happening here, which is historic. I mean, this is genuinely historic stuff. Donald Trump, for the entirety of his adult life, I grew up in the New York area. I remember driving down the West Side Highway in Manhattan and seeing all the Trump-branded buildings. How can you forget of this show, The Apprentice? I mean, the Trump-branded this, the that. This man has been in the public limelight and has controlled the narrative of his own life for the overwhelming majority of my lifetime, and probably the overwhelming majority of the lifetime of most of the listeners as well. But for the next 5 to 6 weeks, Trump is going to be facing a gag order of dubious constitutionality, a sweeping gag order that they, by the way, are going to address again in court tomorrow, actually. In fact, testimony in the case is going to pause tomorrow as the judge, Merchan, holds a kind of a side hearing to decide whether or not Donald Trump should be sanctioned for violating his gag order. And by the way, we're, again, barely a week into this trial even commencing there. So he's going to be subject to this potential gag order violation. He's basically going to just have to sit there. While you have some very unpleasant people saying some very unpleasant things about him, you're going to have people called to the witness stand, people like David Pecker, who is an old Trump friend. He's the former chairman of American Media Incorporated, AMI, which is the parent company of the National Enquirer. He is expected to be a potential quote-unquote star witness for Alvin Bragg, the Soros-funded, corrupt, far-left prosecutor who is trying to incarcerate the former president of the United States. All of this is ultimately leading up towards the testimony from Michael Cohen himself, the man who infamously perjured himself, who served jail time. He's a convicted felon. They're going to have to try to rehabilitate his credibility when it comes to talking about the alleged malicious intentions that went into the so-called hush money payment on the precipice of the 2016 presidential election. You might hear from Karen McDougal, the former Playboy playmate who allegedly had her own affair with Donald Trump. You know, are we going to hear from Michael Avenatti? I mean, that's a potentially juicy storyline. Michael Avenatti potentially coming out and will he testify on Donald Trump's behalf? Is Donald Trump going to testify on his own behalf? I mean, that is very much one of the remaining major questions here as well. He insists that he will. I continue to predict that he will not. I think that Donald Trump in a situation like this, which, as I was just saying, is very much uncharted waters for him, I think that a situation like this, he is going to be ready, willing, and perhaps even eager to listen to those who would counsel him in a slightly different direction, just because he has no precedent. He has no experience whatsoever in being a criminal defendant. This is the first time he's been in this situation in his entire life. He's been in plenty of civil lawsuits, plenty of bankruptcy proceedings, but this is the first time he's in a criminal trial. And a situation like this, you would be remiss if you did not rely upon the advice of your counsel. I personally think that it would be a disastrous decision for Donald Trump to take the witness stand. I think that he probably ultimately will not do so. But that is just one of the many, many things that we are going to be having to track over the next few weeks here. Now, another thing to bear in mind, which is what I was emphasizing in one of our shows towards the end of the week last week, the way that this jury pool ultimately shaped up, you have 12 jurors. And, you know, some of my friends over the weekend were looking at the jury pool, and one of their conclusions was that it's not sympathetic because this is a New York jury pool right there in Manhattan. And you have only one of the 12 jurors who it seems like is anything remotely resembling a regular New York Post reader. And the New York Post, of course, being the right of center newspaper equivalent to the liberal papers, the papers of record, so to speak, in New York City, like the Times. If you're Trump, you basically want more New York Post readers, right? It makes sense. And the fact that there was only one person on the jury who seems like he or she reads the New York Post might be cause for concern. I think that this case is demonstrable nonsense, and it never should have even reached this point. And I, too, would have preferred that there be a situation where there are multiple jurors who are diehard, you know, dyed-in-the-wool New York Post readers. But, you know, another potentially encouraging sign, at least one, as I explained last week, is that there are multiple attorneys. There are at least two lawyers who are actual jurors on this case, one corporate lawyer and one civil litigator. And maybe that doesn't mean a whole lot. It might not. It genuinely might not. Obviously, the legal profession, like virtually every other elite profession in America, has been at this point completely co-opted by corrupt and hegemonic leftism. But in a case like this, a technical case where there are this many crazy wild holes in the prosecution's theory of the case, in a case like this, where Bragg is trying to get around a 2-year statute of limitations on a fraudulent bookkeeping charge by invoking an in furtherance of an additional crime situation, that would be in furtherance of campaign finance violations. But wait, oh, by the way, he can't really do that because that's a federal law. He's only a state prosecutor. Can he even bring those charges? Then there's another statute of limitations issue, even on the federal charges. He claims he can get around it due to a year that lapsed because of COVID. It's basically they gave a year. I mean, the theory of the case is nuts. It's nuts. And that is the reason that the SDNY, the Federal Prosecutor's Office there in New York City, chose not to bring these charges after looking into it. That is the reason why Alvin Bragg's own left-wing predecessor, Cy Vance Jr., also passed on this. So I actually do think that in a case like this, where the match between the law and the facts is this egregious, in a case like this, having lawyers on the jury, people who are trained in the law, who, for lack of a better word, actually care about the law. And yes, I actually do think it is potentially that simple. I think in a situation like this, that actually could matter. So, look, it's going to be uncomfortable for Donald Trump there. I think a lot of people wish that there were cameras and video streaming in the courtroom. That's something that's not going to happen. So you're going to have to rely on some photographs and some news reports here and there. It's going to make for interesting, mouth-watering stuff, I think, for a lot of people there. But that really is what it comes down to. And it, at this point, it really does look like we are going to get a verdict in this case with plenty of time to spare prior to November. This is the one case where it looks, at this point, far likelier than not that there is actually going to be a verdict. All you need is one, folks. All you need is one juror to get a mistrial, to get a hung jury, and to get Donald Trump acquitted. Who is it going to be? Who is it going to be? Well, I saw a couple of jurors on the list last week that could potentially be the one there. And at this point, I just don't know. But all I do know is that we are well into uncharted waters at this point, and I very much look forward to seeing what happens in opening arguments today in the courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan there in New York City. Well, that's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, horrific anarchy is taking over America's so-called elite institutions of higher education, Columbia University and Yale University, chief among them right now. Just absolutely appalling stuff. All that and more when we come back.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast. Politics by Faith.
Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. So last week, the president of Columbia University, Minoshe Shafik, testified before the U.S. Congress last Wednesday about the fact that her university is an absolute cesspool and hotbed of anti-Semitism. Now, for those of us who have been around the block a little bit, the fact that Morningside Heights, the Columbia University campus, is a cesspool of anti-Semitism is not exactly anything new. This, after all, is the same morally decrepit university that quite literally invited Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of the Islamic Republic of Iran to give a speech roughly 20 years ago or so. This has been going on there in Morningside Heights for a long time. They have had open terror apologists, jihad apologists on the faculty for as long as I can remember. Was one of many reasons why I did not even apply to that particular university when I was an 18-year-old looking to go to college. In any event, around the time that the president, Shafik, was testifying before Congress last week, Columbia just took this Hamas apologia to the next level. And they had this encampment, Gaza solidarity encampment on campus, and just started chanting just absolutely disgusting stuff. The kind of stuff that I genuinely did not think we would ever hear in this country, let alone at a purportedly prestigious institution of higher education. That basically, these people in the keffiyehs wrapping themselves in the gear of U.S.-recognized foreign terrorist organizations, shouting, "We are Hamas," shouting, "Go back to Poland," to Jewish students there. Just appalling. I mean, people standing outside the gates of Columbia University chanting to burn Tel Aviv to the ground. How far we have come from the idea of a so-called two-state solution with these radical extremists now quite openly calling for a second Holocaust to be committed in the world's only Jewish state. That is where we are right now. And at this point, over the weekend, you had Rabbi Eli Buchler of Columbia University. Rabbi Buchler is an Orthodox rabbi on campus, and he recommended that Columbia Jewish students go home, saying that it was clear at that point that the university and the NYPD, quote, cannot guarantee Jewish students' safety in the face of extreme anti-Semitism and anarchy. And this is happening at this point across not just Columbia. You had a similar incident at Yale University yesterday where a Jewish student was poked in the eye by a pro-Hamas student who shoved a PLO flagpole into her eye. The student had to be rushed to the hospital. And at this point, you're having Title VI violations of anti-Semitism that are just totally rampant. all across these universities. And my friend Ilya Shapiro, who's quite a bit more libertarian and quite a bit more of a free speech absolutist, frankly, than I am when it comes to these issues, he tweeted yesterday, he said, these are Title VI violations, and you have to send in the National Guard and put Columbia and its leadership into federal receivership. Federal receivership is what Ilya Shapiro suggested. I couldn't agree more. My sympathies to this very much lie with Tom Cotton when he wrote that op-ed that led to the New York Times walkout back in June of 2020. Send in the troops. In a situation like this, you send in the troops to enforce order and to secure the civil rights, the basic bare-bones civil rights of all students on your campus, if the university leadership has shown itself inadequate and incapable of doing so, as it has done now. That is what you have to do. But I will end on a positive note here, because we Jews are going to have our Passover Seders tonight. We will be ringing in the Passover holiday. We will be at our Seders in the diaspora outside of the land of Israel. That is both tonight and tomorrow night there. So I will be off from America on trial tomorrow and Wednesday accordingly. And part of what we read in the Haggadah, which is what we read around the Passover Seder dinner table every year, is the following line. We read this every year, and here it is, quote, "This is what has stood by our fathers and us, for not just one alone has risen against us to destroy us, but in every generation they rise against us to destroy us, and the Holy One, blessed be He, saves us from their hand." That is what we will be reading tonight in our dinner conversations at Seder, commemorating and trying to relive, as is our obligation to relive in every generation, indeed, in every day, actually, the Exodus from Egypt. That is what we will be doing tonight. And the Holy One, blessed be He, does always save us. That's it for today's episode of America on Trial with Josh Hammer. As I mentioned, I will be off tomorrow and Wednesday due to the Passover holiday. We'll be right back with you Thursday morning. That is oral argument day at the Supreme Court for Donald Trump. It's going to be a blockbuster day, folks. Until then, to the Jews, have a Chag Sameach, a happy Passover, and to everyone else, happy listening, and we'll see you Thursday morning.
Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.